10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, welcoming approximately 150 full-time transfer students each year. Eligible Gateway graduates can receive guaranteed admission to Carthage to complete their bachelor's degrees. Transfer to a more personalized education in 4 easy steps. More information about admissions and competitive scholarships for transfers is available at carthage.edu/admissions/transfer. And we welcome you to the Wednesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg.
Dancing in Chattanooga.
Commencing in Chattanooga.
On the Southern Railroad Line.
On the Southern Railroad Line.
Grab on, Roy, grab on!
You sure this train going to Memphis?
Just stick with me.
This is an excerpt from a truly extraordinary show by Kander and Ebb, who are so famous for cabaret in Chicago and should be famous as well, and slowly but surely are becoming famous for this, one of their last collaborations, a show called The Scottsboro Boys, which had a very, very short run, and some would say a tragically short run on Broadway back in 2010. And it is slowly but surely that the public at large is coming to know and embrace this extraordinary show, which is based on a very troubling real-life incident from the mid-20th century, and a show that is timely in more ways than we can count. This was a show that was done by the talented performers of Kenosha Unified to essentially end their most recent school year season. And this production, which I was privileged to see, its last performance, is going to be taken to Lincoln, Nebraska, to the International Thespian Festival. And I'm really excited for today's morning show to be able to speak with Holly Stanfield, who, of course, you all know for the great work that she does with the musical theater program for Kenosha Unified. And she had a very direct hand in shaping this production, although she was not the director specifically. We'll talk about that. And we have two of the amazingly talented young men who were part of the cast for Scottsboro Boys, who are also headed to Lincoln, Nebraska, Ben Woods and Nick Daly, both seniors. And so this was an incredible way for them to crown the careers that they have had in musical theater as high school students in Kenosha, to crown their careers with such an important and deeply moving show that gave each of them really incredible roles to perform. So we have a lot to talk about. Holly Stanfield and Ben Woods and Nick Daly, we welcome all of you to the morning show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for making time for this conversation. Holly, first, just kind of an overarching question about just what the musical theater program of Kenosha Unified entails. Just how many shows are we talking about through the course of a typical school year? And what is usually the role that you are playing in these various shows?
The musical theater program in Kenosha Unified is part of a large theater community. So it's part of the plan where we place students in plays, and we do up to 16 to 20 productions a year across the district. And it is a district program, so students are placed not only in their home school, but they work with students from across the district. So Nick has definitely done work at both Indian Trail and Bradford. I think Ben's only worked at Bradford. But we have students that have worked at Tremper from Bradford and vice versa. So it's a district program that focuses on communication, meeting each other and telling stories together, which is really what the arts is about. We're not competitive. We're just there to tell great stories. So my role in that is just as one of the educators. I work with a lot of very talented people, Nick Cicerelli at Tremper, Robert Allen at Indian Trail High School and Academy, and in my building, Jody Williams and Christy Geidner at Bradford. So we have a really wonderful staff. We also really appreciate everything that we do with the music staff, because this is a real team effort to get kids to perform at the level that we're performing here in Kenosha. They start with such great work in elementary and middle school, and then the choral directors here, Polly Ambor and John Che, Brad Mann, they do such great work with the kids. So I really think that we help students to grow by making sure that they are available for all of these wonderful activities in their lives, and they become very strong performers through their participation in the arts in Kenosha.
That they do. So just to get a sense of just how much these two talented young men have accomplished on the stage, specifically in musicals and maybe straight plays too, let's hear first from Ben. What are the shows that you have been in during your 4 years of high school?
Well, my first show I've ever been in is actually called Dogfight. Mm-hmm. Then I was in Peter and the Starcatcher that same year. I want to say the two most powerful shows I've ever been in, the first one was Next to Normal, and the second one was, of course, Scottsboro Boys.
Which just completed and which you're taking to Nebraska. How about you, Nick?
The first show I did with Holly was back in 2015, and that was Little Mermaid, and I was Flounder. Mm. And I was also in Next to Normal. I did, I crewed for Dogfight for the festival. We did Sister Act that year with Terry.
And Sherry Steinkellner.
Did I say Next to Normal?
Yeah.
I said Next to Normal.
You haven't mentioned Hunchback at Notre Dame yet.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was Quasimodo in Hunchback, which was definitely a pivotal moment, at least for me in my high school career, where I realized that musical theater is where I think I'm meant to be. I think that it's a vocation, really, and a calling, so that's what I am choosing to do.
That's where you heard the call.
Yeah.
So, Holly, when you have this plethora of talented singers who audition for what amounts to the whole season, what kind of a challenge is it to decide where to put Nick and where to put Ben and where to put all of the other talented singers who audition for you? And what kinds of things do you think about in making some of those casting decisions?
We definitely take a look at the students first. So we audition at Indian Trail High School and Academy and Bradford at the end of the school year and take a look at the next school year so that we work through the students instead of at the students. In other words, there are some people that just go, oh, I want to do the show, and you kind of make sure that you get the students to do what you need them to do. We would prefer to take a look at the students, all 200 to 250 of them, and go, okay, well, this is the group of students that we are working with next year. Let's look at the literature that's out there and figure out how to help them grow. Mm-hmm. So that really is where we come from. We have a really wonderful relationship with Music Theater International, one of the large licensing agencies for musicals. And oftentimes they will call us and say, hey, we have this show. Will this work for you? But that's always... the arrangement with them is always done with the idea that we have kids that really do fit those roles. We've definitely at times said no if we didn't feel that the music was right for our community or really fit our students. But when we get those are called pilots. It's a really great opportunity for the kids to be a part of the process of bringing musical theater out to the public. Sometimes they're modifying scripts, or we're writing instruction for other teachers that will eventually do the show. So our community and our students really have a voice in the real process of how musicals work and how they become part of the language of who we are. So that's neat. But other than those projects, we definitely just look at the students and cast projects that work for them. So after last year's audition and seeing a very talented group of young men of color audition for us, I had seen the Scottsboro Boys actually in one of its original Broadway. I was there in New York for another project and saw it. And as I told the kids, I do musicals because I can work with the vocal and some dance, actually. They don't know that, but I'm okay with that too, even though we hire amazing choreographers who are so much better than me. And the acting portion of a show. So I direct musicals a lot because I'm cheap. I don't have to pay myself to be a musical director and do all of that kind of stuff. But honestly, if plays really move me, usually it's not a musical that's doing that. Usually it's a story that's much more realistic and does not have music. Like All My Sons, Robert Paul's production in Chicago just totally took me away. Or his production of King Lear later totally took me away. Or The Goat and Who Is Sylvia on Broadway. Just those are things that are in the top list of my I was trembling when I walked out of the theater. This is the only musical I've ever seen that's done that to me. I walked out of the theater in Broadway, and it took my breath away. And so after we saw our talented young men, I thought, you know, we could probably do this. And with Ben and Nick being seniors that were really possibly interested in moving on in their careers in this form, Ben's also looking at writing, and Nick is also looking at writing. They're also writers of musicals. I just thought it was an important piece for them, the other three seniors that we saw, and then our other four performers are freshmen. So, interestingly enough, they do really approach the age of the original Scottsboro Boys because there was a 12, 13-year-old child that was on that train originally in the story. So it was appropriate to do this. We decided, however, to surround them with professional actors. So we contacted Ben's brother, David Murray, who had graduated from our program, and he was interested. Braxton Molinaro, who's out in L.A. and working out there, and he was also interested. And then Denzel Tsopnang, who is an actor from Chicago, also agreed to do the piece. And because of where we are in our culture especially, it was important that I not tell the story this time, that we hired a director and choreographer of color. And Chris Carter joined our school, and we are so grateful that he has done the project with us. He has been an inspiration and a great role model and a great connection for everybody. So that we are very happy with our decision to look at the show in that light, because sometimes you need to be a part of that culture to honestly tell the story that you're going to tell.
And was this a case, as has been, I know, often in the past, where this was an unveiling of, in a sense, the high school version of Scottsboro Boys, or was this the Scottsboro Boys, essentially, in its original form?
This is the Scottsboro Boys in its original form. We did not take any liberties with the script whatsoever. You saw what language survived from the Broadway production. It's been done in London as well very successfully, and across the country in different places. So when I asked John Prignano at Music Theater International if we could have the show, he said yes, as long as the adult actors were mentors to the kids. So they are actor mentors. And they have actually done that role beautifully with our young people. Wow. It has been a really powerful experience. The other goal of our department was definitely to connect with the black community in theater so that our students of color have connections already with that culture as they move out of our building and into their further educational lives and their professional lives.
For those of you just joining us, we are talking with Holly Stanfield and with two students, Ben Woods and Nick Daly, all a part of an extraordinary production that was performed not long ago, Kander and Ebb's Scottsboro Boys, and they are about to take this very exciting and moving production to the International Thespian Festival in Lincoln, Nebraska. I wanted to mention that I already knew about this show because my wife and I have a young friend who grew up in our church up in Racine who now plays violin on Broadway, and he's playing right now. He's the concertmaster for Dear Evan Hansen, but he was in the orchestra for the Broadway production of Scottsboro Boys. And he, and as far as he's concerned, everybody who was part of that show was just heartbroken that it did not sustain beyond 29 preview performances and 49 regular performances. So in the annals of Broadway, that's just a wink of an eye, and it was gone, and fortunately not gone for good. And it's I think we'll talk in a moment about why it was not successful initially on Broadway, the things that make it maybe a difficult show to understand at a glance. But let's talk about the real-life story, which is part of this. Holly, let's start with you, but Ben and Nick, feel free to join in. Explain a little bit about the story, the very sad story, troubling story, that is at the heart of Scottsboro Boys.
It is the story of nine young men who are on a train in Alabama in 1931, and they are wrongly accused of raping two white young women. You're in the Depression era, and all of the people on the train are people that are trying to move and find a way to live, including the two white young women. So everybody's dragged off the train. Supposedly there's an altercation between some white young men and black young men, but everybody gets dragged off the train, and because the girls do not want to be arrested, they lie and say that they have been accosted or raped by these black young men. But it is a lie. And the young men are incarcerated, and they go through a trial, and they're all convicted of the crime and sentenced to die with the electric chair. And then a series of events happens. The Communist Party up in the northern part of the United States gets involved, and it becomes a huge media blitz. And they send down Leibowitz, who is a very smart, aggressive Jewish lawyer, into the South to represent these young men. And then through a series of trials and events, all but Ben Wood's character are released. They aren't exonerated, but they're released through the legal system. None of them come to good end. Their lives are destroyed. And it is one of the moments in our history that drives Rosa Parks to sit on the bus.
As far as you know, does this show adhere pretty closely to the historic story?
Yes. Yes, it does adhere pretty closely to the real history of the Scottsboro Boys.
Let's hear from our two young men about the characters that you portray. I actually want to start with Nick. Tell us the name of your character and what was most important about him.
Well, I played two characters, actually. I played, I start off with Ozzy Powell, who is one of the nine boys that's accused of rape. And I also play Ruby Bates, who is the lady that accuses the boys of rape. And it's not necessarily difficult to shift between two characters in this show, I think, because it's so broad. And that's part of like the satirical kind of element of the show. Ozzy, his storyline, he starts off, he's on the train and he's looking for work because he was working in a sawmill. And he didn't want to work there anymore because they didn't treat him right. So he was looking for work. And then when he was accused, he was thrown in jail with the other boys, and he went through trial after trial. Each time they were found guilty, and eventually he snapped, and he attacked one of the guards, and the guards shot him in the head and left him handicapped. So he didn't die, but he was not the same for the rest of his life.
And that's something we see right before our eyes, and that's something that you have to portray.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an amazing moment, and just one more layer of tragedy that's part of this story. And Ben, tell us about your character.
So my character, Haywood Patterson, he starts off looking for work. I think not only to provide for himself, but also to provide for his mother. Him and his mother, they have like a real close relationship. And when he's incarcerated, it's just devastating because he can't be there to see his mother and provide for her as well. Later on in the show, like in the middle, Haywood learns how to write, learns how to read as well, so he can actually send letters to his mother. Another thing about Haywood is he actually escaped, I think, 2 times?
I don't remember, yeah.
Well, I know one time he actually escaped, and he got sent back to jail because they found him. And he basically stayed in jail for the rest of his life. He died in jail, and it's very sad how he can come from... Because in the beginning, he's always, when he first got incarcerated, he was always grounded in telling the truth. And he never took that down. And I think it's fascinating how nothing broke him from that state. But yeah, it's a very sad story.
Yeah, I'm curious if either of you knew anything about this story ahead of the show, or if either of you had ever heard of the show, or was this completely new ground for both of you, and as far as you know, for most of your castmates?
Yeah, not at all. I didn't know anything about the Scottsboro Boys. When this show was brought to us and reading through the script, it was just heartbreaking to hear that this actually happened. And I think it's kind of crazy how we weren't taught this in history classes.
I knew a little bit about the show, but I mean, now thinking back on it after being in the show and understanding it, I didn't really know anything about the story. I just knew the bare bones. These boys were accused of rape. I didn't know how each of their lives individually was ruined by this one event that happened on a day that, like any other day, mm-hmm. and it just completely wrecked their lives out of nowhere.
Right. And of course, what's in some ways even more tragic is that this is a story that, for various reasons, attracted all kinds of attention and news headlines, and this kind of injustice played out all the time. It was all too normal, and one just shudders to think of all of the injustice that never did make the headlines. It just quietly went on in this awful sort of relentless way for year after year after year. One thing we have not talked about, and I'm really interested, Ben and Nick, to get your reaction to this, I don't think we've yet talked about kind of the framework within which this story is told. Nick hinted at it when he talked about kind of the broad way in which certain aspects of the story are told. And that is the framework which, in a sense, amounts to a minstrel show. So, Holly, why don't you kind of spell that out for our listeners, what we're talking about, and then I'm anxious to hear from Ben and Nick about their initial reaction to these elements of the show.
The minstrel show is actually part of our history in America. It developed after the Civil War and into the 20th century, was still happening. And it was a form of entertainment where people that were not of color, people that were white, put on blackface and basically made fun of the caricatures that they had developed that represented the black culture in America. So it began after the Civil War, really traveled through the Jim Crow era, which is the beginning of the 20th century. And there were definitely black minstrel shows as well, but it was definitely a very negative satirization caricature of people of color. And it was considered to be just a normal form of entertainment. People my age and your age will still remember images from our childhood of Uncle Ben's rice, of all of the different caricatures that we would, Little Black Sambo. I mean, all of these caricatures were really a part of our culture, and they were not a positive part of our culture. So the minstrel show was a very challenging choice, I think, for the authors and Susan Stroman, the original director choreographer, to make. She was part of that process. To strongly tell the story, and I do think it does strengthen the theatricality, but also the emotionality of what you see in the Scottsboro Boys.
Right. So just so our listeners understand, in a sense, we feel like at least large stretches of this show are being told within the framework of a minstrel show.
Correct, which is period correct for the story.
Right, and there's the one white member of the cast is
the interlocutor. So in a traditional minstrel show, you have the interlocutor, and then you have two sidemen, Tambo and Bones, and they're the jokesters
right.
that surround the story.
So that was Braxton Molinaro was
Denzel. Yes. Oh, Braxton was the interlocutor, right. And then you had Denzel and David were the Bones and interlocutor.
So, and they were the guests that you brought
correct.
In to be part of this. And I am guessing, and from what I've read, it's pretty much a certainty that this is probably a major element in why the show struggled on Broadway the way that it did, and why some performances there were pickets out in front
yep.
and so on, protesters and.
I think oftentimes people judge pieces before they see them. So I think when the publicity went out when the word went out that this is the style that they had chose to tell the story in, people reacted to the fact that that's very controversial. But when you see the show, it is totally appropriate to the story.
Yeah, it really works
yeah.
well. I suspect also the fact that Kander and Ebb are both Caucasian. For certain people, that raised alarm bells.
And I'm sure that Ms. Stroman is also Caucasian, and she was directing and choreographing.
Right. So, Nick and Ben, I'm really curious to know when you first, read this script. I'm guessing that was your initial encounter. There was no DVD of the show to watch, I assume. So you were just reading this script and having it explained to you. What was your reaction to that element of it?
The story is kind of separate, I think, from the minstrels. Like, there are minstrel moments in the show. It was definitely shocking, especially the final scene, which is performed in blackface.
Where you are in blackface.
Yes.
Yeah, and we should mention that sometimes happened on the stage where black performers would be in blackface, although typically it was whites who were in blackface. But yes, you apply this makeup to yourselves, and
yeah. I think what the show does so beautifully is that it takes you through the story of the Scottsboro Boys, and you're able to live with them from the moment before they're accused, when they're just living their lives and being teenage boys.
Happy-go-lucky for the most part.
And you travel with them through their story, through each trial, from when Ozzie is shot, when Haywood tries to escape, all of these different moments in the show. And eventually when you get to the end of their story, you're heartbroken because you've seen them lose everything. And then right at the end, the writers of the show put blackface in that moment to kind of show what blackface really represents. And I think that as a society, we've kind of gotten away from how detrimental that is to our culture. And I think this show is kind of bringing that issue to light.
Yeah, for sure. Ben, how about you? What was your reaction to really specifically this element of the show, which I'm assuming you had never had any really direct encounter with before, as a performer at least?
Well, I think the minstrel style, the choice for them to use this style brings more reality to the piece. Because I feel like a lot of people try to sugarcoat our history and try to leave the past in the past. But I don't know why we would leave the past in the past when it brought us to where we are now. And I think what this show does, it uses these historical moments and it actually teaches the audience, this is what actually happened. And I think it's very amazing how it uses the minstrel style to teach. And yeah, I think it just makes it more strong. And even how the young men, us in the cast, are closer to the ages of the actual Scottsboro boys. I think even that brings more strength and power to our production. So yeah, I think it's very smart for the style that they chose for it to be minstrel.
And it made sense for you right from the beginning? I mean, I think it's a totality. I mean, and as someone in the audience, there's no question, but it's incredible. But I'm just wondering what it was like when you first read this or were told that this was going to happen and it was going to end with you in blackface. I mean, did that not give you pause, or do you so trust Holly that you knew that this was all for a higher purpose?
Yeah. It definitely shocked me at first, but I know that KUSD Theater has always kind of pushed the envelope and been at the forefront of social issues.
Oh, yeah.
Especially, that's why I think our community in Kenosha is so supportive. And I think that's because we have been working on that for the past two decades. So I was definitely shocked at first, but I was comforted when I knew that Chris would be directing and choreographing, and it's educational theater, so it was definitely, we had a lot of conversations as a cast and as a whole company at times. So it was shocking, but by the end I understood and I realized why it was so important.
Right. Well, and it's supposed to be shocking. That's part of the point of it, yeah. I suppose. But yeah, that put you through a lot. I'm really curious also to know, Ben and Nick, what being in this show was like for you, and not just for the two of you, but for the whole cast, including these freshmen, who are also part of something so extraordinary that I am assuming really hit you in a very direct and personal way, probably beyond what even other powerful shows have been for you. What kind of an experience was this like for you and your castmates?
It was definitely an emotional experience for everyone involved, especially us, because as the actors, because it's our history. Actually, both storylines in the show are our history, because you have the story of the Scottsboro boys, which is portrayed in the show.
Themselves, yes.
Yeah, and then you also have the minstrel men and the interlocutor, and then there's a conflict there, which is shown even up to the very end when they eventually wipe off their blackface and say no more. This isn't right, and we're not going to keep doing this to ourselves. And that's historically correct, because for the longest time, our history as black performers, those were the only roles we could get. And I mean, even now, there are still roles that are, you know, happy-go-lucky or typical, like, Aunt Jemima roles or and things like that. And I think that we are now, as a culture, definitely breaking away from those, and we're seeing more actors of color in leading roles. And I think that's definitely having an impact on how we empathize with each other. But yeah, it was definitely an emotional roller coaster for all of us.
Yeah.
A lot of conversations.
Ben, what do you have to say about that?
I think the show taught us as the actors a lot. Just walking through the world today, not saying that we were, I believe it was harder for the Scottsboro boys back in those times. But even now, we still face the same problems we faced back in those times. And it just, I think this show taught me to be more cautious. I think it taught us a lot of lessons.
Wow. Holly, what about what you observed, not as the director, but I'm sure on hand for much of the process by which this show took shape? And did anything in particular maybe surprise you about how this show took place and how powerful it ultimately turned out to be?
Quite honestly, I don't think there were any surprises. When educators choose to do something of this strength, we have to be extremely careful, because these are amazing young people and we want to teach them and not hurt them. So we began the process with Chris Carter coming in and introducing a document that we found online that had the history of the Scottsboro Boys, the original Scottsboro Boys. And he met with our cast and kind of prepped them and told them to read the history. So that's how we began. The next meeting that we had with everybody was with the cast and also their parents. So the parents came in, and we had dinner together. We shared a meal. And then Chris introduced what they would be reading in the script, including the minstrel style and the conflicts in the story and where it sat in history.
That's a good idea.
All of the parents after that were on board, and many felt it was an important story to tell. So we proceeded. And prior to all of this, we also have a form with the district that we filed that says this has strong literature, and the district was solidly behind it. After that, we did a read-through with actually not Chris at that point, but with myself and the students. And they had an opportunity to respond to what they had read and heard. And everybody seemed to be okay, challenged and emotional, but okay, by the end of that process after our conversations. Then I went ahead and taught the music, because I am the musical director, and we went ahead and worked on the language in the show with them. I did that with them, working on where acting actions and intentions could happen in the piece, and we memorized it that way. So when Chris walked in with the three professional actors, our kids were kind of in the professional zone that things were done, and they were ready to work on the script with Chris.
Wow.
So everything was finished. And we'd had several long conversations about what they felt and what this brought forward in their lives, and how resonant it was today. We had discussions about things that had happened in school. We had discussions about things that had happened in our community through that process. So all of that was done. Then we began rehearsing the show, and we brought the parents in about 2 weeks prior to our opening and showed them a PBS special on the original Scottsboro Boys, which is an extremely strong piece of film. And Chris also introduced a short YouTube clip on what minstrel style is and how it sits historically in our culture, so that everybody understood the style of the show, everybody understood the real story of the Scottsboro Boys, and everybody was aware that at this point, as a director, he felt it was important for the kids to apply the blackface. But if they didn't feel safe in that, that that would not happen.
Mm.
So after that, we went into dress rehearsals, technical rehearsals, and it did come to the point where we needed to apply the makeup. And Christy Geidner and some of our makeup crew kids were helping them apply the makeup because you have to learn how to do it the first time. But after watching the reaction to that, which was extremely strong for everybody in the room, we decided, and I think all of the directors, Chris, myself, Jody, everybody that was a part of that moment, decided that it needed to be a choice on a nightly basis. Okay. And that nobody would be applying makeup to them. They had to be applying it and choosing to do that themselves.
They were not made up. They would make themselves
they
up.
They have to make themselves
and,
up.
And
they have to choose to tell the story.
And
way.
On a given night, if someone just didn't
then
feel
then we don't
like,
do it.
And all or nothing? Or
yeah.
Okay.
One person could pull the plug, and that was okay. And that could be a private conversation. The kids would never know who that was. We would just say not happening to
wow.
them.
Wow. Do you mind me asking if it ever happened?
No, they chose to do it every night.
So the plug was never pulled. What did that feel like to put on black face makeup?
Well, I didn't actually, I actually wasn't one of the ones who put on the makeup. So it's really hard for me to talk about this, but just seeing it, I know it was uncomfortable for you guys as well putting it on, but seeing it was also uncomfortable for me because it just affected me so hard that this was something that was done in the past
and not that long ago.
And not that long ago.
In the whole sweep of history, it's
right.
the day
absolutely
before yesterday.
In my life.
And
yeah.
it might be still going on now, to be honest.
Right. But and there's probably still people who don't grasp the harm that it did or the way or the demeaning nature of it. I mean, the fact that it was kind of springy and happy and cheerful.
Right.
I think.
Funny.
Yeah.
Right.
Masked, you know, kind of the deeper truth. Did you have to apply?
Yes. I did apply the blackface every night, and the first time definitely it was dehumanizing because I mean we were putting it on and we understood that that's what had happened, and even some of the original Scottsboro Boys then they went on into vaudeville and they
true.
Would
did
have
minstrel.
Done the same things that we were doing for the audience.
Wow.
And that definitely did affect us. And we had a conversation as a company about how we were feeling and why we were feeling the way we were. But I think ultimately we decided that we needed to perform with the blackface because we wanted the audience to have the same reaction that we had, which was that it's not right, and it's really unfortunate that that's a moment in our history. The only uniquely American form of theater is this style.
Mm. That's a shameful legacy in a lot of ways. Well, I have to say, as someone who was in the audience for that especially emotional last performance of your production of Scottsboro Boys, it's one of the most powerful things and impressive things I've ever seen in my life, and I feel like it was a real privilege to be there, to be part of that audience, and to see the great work that you did and all of the cast and crew to put all this together. And I'm sure it's a really exciting prospect for you to be bringing this to Nebraska, to the International Thespian Festival. I know that it costs money to do that. Is there a vehicle for anybody listening who would like to contribute to the cost, to help cover the costs of that?
They can definitely contact me. I know the district is working on setting up an online donation service. It's not quite up yet, but absolutely. The production itself was because of all of the personnel that we hired to surround the kids for the safety and the message was extremely expensive. And yes, the district has been incredible in backing it to go to Nebraska. They are doing great work with that. But yeah, the whole adventure is very, very pricey.
There's also the variety show, Broadway Night, this Friday. And that's all donations if you would like to come out and support. All of us in the cast are performing.
And where is that?
That's at Indian Trail.
And you have to buy a ticket ahead of time or just buy it that you get, go at the door?
Yes, I believe ticketing, and also there will be donations requested.
Excellent. Well, we hope people will seek out that opportunity. I know you were down at Harbor Market performing. I just happened to be there when you were there, and as were the microphones of WGTD. So we'll finish out with the very spirited, I think, opening number to the show with the cast of Scottsboro Boys. Ben Woods, Nick Daly, Holly Stanfield, thank you so much for being part of this morning show today. And thank you for all the great work that you and your colleagues did with this really important show. And best wishes as you take it to Nebraska, and best wishes to all that comes after for you.
On the Southern Railroad line.
Grab on, Roy, grab on!
You sure this train going to Memphis?
Just stick with me while I jog my sun down.
I got up in the morning when my sleep was done, and I felt that cheery Chattanooga sun. Then I thanked the Lord above that I was still alive, and I waited for the 6:05.
Commencing in Chattanooga.
Chugga chugga, and it chugga chugga in and out the chair you are as I trampled in the old box car. Then I settled back believing that the world was fine. I was traveling on the Southern line. Commencing in Chattanooga. You know I'm gonna see the world on the Southern Railroad line. There ain't no final way to travel. Now you can take your B&O and you can take your Santa Fe. And you can take your old Rock Island pine
and throw them all away.
And if the Pennsylvania calls, just say you want your money back. And if the New York Central's on the phone,
tell them they're way off the track.
Commencing in Chattanooga.
Commencing in Chattanooga.
I said we're
commencing in Chattanooga. On the Southern Railroad line. On the Southern Railroad line.
Now you can take your B&O.
And you can take your Santa Fe. And you can take your old Rock Island line. And throw them all away.
And if the Pennsylvania calls,
just say you want your money back.
Your central's on the phone.
Tell them they're way off the track. Commencing in Chattanooga.
Bend my bones. I know all the things. Southeastern Georgia.
Commencing
down to Pensacola.
In Chattanooga. On the Southern Railroad.
Straight on to Shreveport.
On the Southern Railroad.
When the freight's leaving, when they arrive, I can light a butt in the wind on top of a moving boxcar.
I am free. 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 There ain't a soul can hold me back. Cause I am just as free as air. As long as I got legs and dreams got wheels, I can run.
And if the Lord above comes down and asking me where the hell I am, just answer no one knows where he would be. Cause I'm a boxcar
wild. Commencing in Chattanooga. Commencing in Chattanooga. On the Southern Railroad line. On the Southern Railroad.
The young cast of Kenosha Unified's production of Scottsboro Boys, recorded at Harbor Market. I'm Gregory Berg. And tomorrow on the morning show, best-selling author J. Randy Taraborelli talking about his latest book, The Kennedy Heirs. This book focuses on what we might think of as the third generation of the Kennedy family, the grandchildren of Joe and Rose Kennedy. And it's a fascinating